All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners, let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I hate spiders. I hate them. I hate them so much. I am very much like Ron Weasley in this instance because, dude, spider. All the kids were crying because one of the spiders got killed. I would have been cheering. I would have been drinking beers, toasting to Mad-Eye.
Yay. Oh my gosh, it's so true. I am the official spider killer / spider capturer and releasing out into the wild of the family. I'm a huge spider lover because they eat all the little icky bugs, and nope. I'm here for it.
Want nothing to do with them.
But yeah,
evil creatures that should not exist.
I hear you, my friend. Well, here's the scoop. Those of you who are joining in live, we want to know where you're from, what house you're from, and which of the three curses would have given you the most heebie-jeebies.
None of them. Would have been happy.
You would have been happy if it was a spider.
Would have clapped every single time.
Oh my gosh. Out of control.
Sure, make it drown itself. Sounds good.
Well, here we are, chapter 14 in the Goblet of Fire, The Unforgivable Curses. Avada Kedavra's a curse that needs a powerful bit of magic behind it. You could all get your wands out now and point them at me and say the words, and I doubt I'd get as much as a nosebleed. But that doesn't matter. I'm not here to teach you how to do it. Now, if there's no counter curse, why am I saving you? Because you've got to know. You've got to appreciate what the worst is. You don't want to find yourself in a situation where you're facing it. Constant vigilance, he roared, and the whole class jumped again.
Oh, love it. You know, it's so hard knowing that this is Barty Crouch Jr., but also knowing that it's like not Mad-Eye, but you would feel like this is something Mad-Eye would absolutely say and do.
Yeah, because we're sitting here doubting, do we know Mad-Eye?
Right. Like at this point, you think
wild.
You do.
Yes.
But you don't. You don't at all. But you don't at all until the fifth book.
It's Barty Crouch Jr.
But this feels like something Mad-Eye would say.
Well, you know, it's so funny because Mad-Eye spent so much of his time with the Death Eaters, with people who follow the dark arts and everything. So, you know, maybe even as a spy many a times, and you kind of have to like pick up on what they're like. Where is that fine line? You know what I mean? It's like the gray area of what can you do? What can you not do? Mad-Eye had to learn the unforgivable curses. He had to learn about all of these different things. So, yeah, I agree with you. I feel like Mad-Eye would have still probably taught this lesson.
Sure, absolutely.
The OG Mad-Eye. We wanted to thank all of our friends who are members at jointhenerdclan.com. Remember, if you are a listener of the Potterverse, and if we bring you Lumos in the Time of Nox, you can join for as little as $2 a month. It honestly goes towards important things. I'll tell you right now, our computer has been going on the fritz. We actually have had a little bit of a delay in recording the Potterverse.
Yes.
So we appreciate your understanding between I was in the hospital having some potential heart issues that I think are going to be okay, and our kids, and then our computer would always break whenever we wanted to get the Potterverse going. So no joke, those of you who are members at jointhenerdclan.com, your money is going towards us making sure we can keep podcasting. So I just wanted to give a
we've
little
had this
call.
Computer now for like 7 years. Like,
yes.
It's time.
It is time, as Rafiki would say. But thank you, friends, at Join the Nerd Clan, and thank you those of you who are going to be joining, as you are making a massive difference. All right, let's get into the show.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Here we are. We are in chapter 14. What happened in this, you may ask? If you haven't reread it recently, I can tell you. Okay, so fourth year students, Harry, Ron, Hermione, rest of those students, they are learning about the unforgivable curses in their class with faux Mad-Eye Moody, the defense against the dark arts. In this, a lot of scary things happen for Neville Longbottom, so faux Professor Moody takes Neville into his office.
Would it be faux Moody? Fodai Mooney?
That's too much. I'm just going to go faux Mad-Eye Moody.
Okay.
Harry and Ron lie about their divination's homework. Hermione opens up about what she's been doing this whole time. S-P-E-W.
Worst.
And Sirius finally gets a letter back. Hedwig is back. One of my favorite characters in the books. Yes, Hedwig the Owl. Hedwig is back, my friends. But yes, Sirius wrote a letter. So that is a lot of stuff that happens in this episode, in this chapter.
Yes.
You know, it's funny because there are those occasional chapters where it's just kind of like a little fluff, you know, like here we are. We're just setting the stage, letting you know what's happening. This was not one of them, friends. This was a lot in one chapter.
Yeah, this is one of those chapters that's sneaky important.
Sneaky.
Sneaky.
Sneaky deaky.
Especially with the whole thing between foe Mad-Eye Moody and
Neville.
Mm-hmm. Big deal. Big, mm-hmm. big deal. And this is one of the brilliant things that the author does. Immediately you think, it's something that you dismiss as, well, it's just the teacher, you know, having a cup of tea and, hey, let me take you in here. And actually, you know what? As a matter of fact, I got a couple of books that you might like, you know, to soften the mood or whatever. No, not at all. The author is setting this entire thread up. As a matter of fact, you could argue that the entire lesson is specifically just for Neville, so that he could get this reaction, bring him into the room, and say, "Yeah, this is the book that I need you to have." And he gives the book, and that is what helps propel Harry for
a trial that is 6 months later.
Right, exactly.
So, isn't that bananas?
So you, as the reader, are just letting this wash over you, like, "Yeah, okay, it's just the teacher making up for an error."
Mm-hmm.
No, not at all. This is an exquisite layout for an entire plan that will benefit yourself as the reader later on in the story.
But it goes to show you that obviously the staff and the people who are involved with the Triwizard Tournament, they know what the tasks are going to be. It takes a lot of work and planning. So foe Mad-Eye Moody knows that the students who are in it, which he knows Harry Potter is going to be one of them, are going to have to go swimming in the lake. And he needs to get this book into Neville Longbottom's hands so Neville can have the time to read this book,
right,
to understand all of the purposes of Gillyweed,
yeah,
and everything that we are going to see much later on. But I agree with you, Blake. You know, you need to... these books are so fun to read after you've already read them before, because you know what's happening. And that's why I love the Potterverse, is we are able to talk about these spoilerific things,
right,
that happen. So, of course, we're hanging on out. And there's a fun little thing about Snape being in a foul mood, and they're talking about how once again he was thwarted from the position of the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, and they think that maybe that's it. Maybe Snape is actually scared of Mad-Eye Moody. You know, that might be one of the kind of undercurrents going on. And Ron even jokes like, what if Mad-Eye Moody, you know, transformed Snape as he had transformed Draco?
Right,
that would
right.
be quite fun. So Hermione's still going back and forth, going to the library. We know what she's working on in the long run. It ends up being SPEW. So we can kind of talk about that right now. And I have asked Blake kindly to not hate on it as much as he has. We're also working on his being kinder to speaking to those of you who are Hufflepuffs, because you are my people, okay? You are my people. And
no,
SPEW,
God,
even
please,
though it wouldn't
no,
have been a club
no,
that Blake would have signed up
no,
for, it's a club that I would have signed
no,
up for.
You're such a dork.
It's okay.
You absolutely... No.
I would have been a founding member.
You would have been the founding member of SPEW.
I wouldn't have been the president. Pfft, I hate that job. Definitely would have been would not have been a vice president. Hate that job too. Secretary? Nope.
One of the long-running jokes...
I would have been the social media committee.
One of the long-running jokes in Mary and Blake media history is that I, had I met Mary in college, would have ranked on Mary in the worst way, because Mary was involved in everything. Whatever club you wanted to put together, Mary was a part of it.
And then when there wasn't a club, I would then make it.
Yeah, she made her own sorority or whatever it is. Like,
yep.
I was like, and here I was just, you know.
I was commencement speaker.
I was in my room.
Orientation leader. RA.
Playing Madden.
TA.
Such a dork. I was the president of the History Society. I will give you that. But other than
philanthropic
that,
chair
yeah,
of my made-up
no.
sorority.
What do you do with all that stuff? Go to college, have fun, drink
I
some
did.
Beers, and have a good time.
Listen, man, I was too busy. I was too busy.
Oh,
and I had a blast.
I would have ranked on you in the worst way.
Yep. And we would never have ended up where we are
There's
today.
There's that
so.
Girl doing all that crap.
You would have liked me though, because I did dress up as Rogue and walk around.
That would have been hot. I would have totally agreed. I totally
agree.
That
okay, so it's SBEW. We're just gonna hang out here for just a hot second, as we are going to be having a lot more of the Elvish stuff coming on for a little bit. But SBEW, it stands for the Society for the Promotion of Elvish Welfare. This is what Hermione's been working on. Watch your mouth, Blake. I really can't handle this. She made 50 badges, all different colors. You know that she has put her heart and soul into this, that she cares very, very much about this. And I just love this about Hermione, because we are able to see her dedication to causes. We're able to see how much she cares for other beings. And I love just to the extent of that she will thoroughly research something and make sure that it is... It makes me think about what she does as they move on. They're searching for Horcruxes. They move on and they're searching about the Deathly Hallows, how she will take, you know, the Tales of Beedle-the-Bard and pour over this children's book over and over and over and over and over again. And you're able to see the studious habits. We've known that she likes to study. Mm-hmm. We know that she likes learning and being the top of the class. But when she's passionate about a cause, Hermione will stop at nothing.
The problem about the passion for the cause is that it is so hasty and it is so juvenile that she automatically thinks that Harry and Ron are just going to join, and she assigns them these roles in this organization that they have no passion for. They don't care, and they're only doing it just because Hermione put it all together. So
this
it shows
reminds
you-
me of 8 years ago when I was really passionate about this thing called Outlander, and I took my best friend, aka my husband, and said, guess what we're going to do? Yeah, we're going to create a podcast about Outlander.
But these people ain't married. By the way, sorry, hold on, get up.
They're a fire sassana.
But she's 14.
I know, that's what I'm, yeah, she's 14, and that's what I'm saying. The cause is so juvenile, and the way that she goes about putting it all together without, you think
she's
that she's got this
young
all planned
teenager,
out.
Blake.
Yeah, but I,
you
and
don't
that's
have
the,
planned
that's
out.
The pro, and I'm not the one making spew.
So what? It's not like she's running for president. She's making a school club. But I say more power to
and
you,
that's
Hermione
why
Granger.
I can't, I don't like reading it, because it's just a waste of time.
You don't care about Dobby the way that I do.
No,
so.
I don't. I
know.
I absolutely
he's one of my top
not.
Three characters.
Don't care about Dobby. I mean, it's not that I don't
Who
care about Dobby.
Who are your top three favorite characters from the Harry Potter series? Top three. List them off just right now. You can change it eventually, but go.
Snape.
Okay.
Sirius.
Yep.
And, oh, that's a, Bellatrix.
Okay. Yeah. See?
Yeah.
Hagrid, Dobby, Hedwig. Could we be any different? Could we be any different?
Just like that. A winner!
Yeah, absolutely. We could not be any more different when it comes to. That's why I like emo Harry so much. And you're just like, let's watch Harry Potter 1. I'm like, no, let's watch 5, 6, 7. emo Harry's the best.
Yeah.
Especially Order of the Phoenix. I can't wait to get into that book.
Right then. Okay, so here we are hanging out with foe Mad-Eye Moody, who... Just always keep that in mind, that this is foe. I just absolutely love it. So he's done his work, okay? Barty Crouch Jr., Foe Mad-Eye Moody, has done his work. He is a dedicated staff member. He has read the letter from Lupin, catching him up on what the kids have studied so far, and he has created a really freaky lesson for their first lesson. It's like, welcome back to school. Here's how you could have died.
Yeah.
If you were here several years ago.
And you know,
ago.
The funny thing is that the kids... A lot of the kids are into it, like Ron and everybody. Can you believe that? This guy knows what he's doing. My thought is these kids should be like Snape. These kids should be scared. Scared of Moody.
Of Mad-Eye Moody?
Oh, yeah. Terrified. Guys murdering spiders the first day of school.
On the flip side, you think about the previous professors that they've had. They've had pushover Professor Quirrell, who, yes, had Voldemort living on the back of his head.
Gotta give him a
but
break.
But like, he was a pushover. Then they had Gilderoy Lockhart.
Free of charge.
Exactly. And then they had last year, like, wicked nice Lupin, who was like, oh, do you want to see a Grindelwald?
Yeah, sure.
How about a Hinky Punk? Like, you know what I mean? He's just like, so they've had Defense of the Dark Arts with fluff teachers. Lupin, great, but he didn't necessarily show them anything really scary, you know? Mm-hmm. So here they are being like, we love Defense Against the Dark Arts. Our teachers are always a hoot. And in comes Mad-Eye Moody, mm-hmm. who now the kids have heard from the upperclassmen is awesome. Right? So they're like, all right, we always have fun in Defense Against the Dark Arts.
Yep.
And this guy's awesome. So, and I love that right away, Ron's the one that questions Mad-Eye Moody. He says, you have... you've been very, very behind in learning about how to deal with the dark arts. And Ron blurts out, what? Oh, no. He says, I only have 1 year. So this is when Ron blurts out, you're only here for 1 year. I think these people think he's like a rock star. When Ron says, what? Yeah. You aren't staying? Yeah. Like, to them, they're like, this guy's no joke.
Sure.
Like, he is amazing. And then Mad-Eye Moody says, you're Arthur Weasley's kid. Ron, who we know does not get acknowledged frequently, mm-hmm. is finally acknowledged. This guy's an even bigger rock star right now.
That's a really good
point.
Then he
kills a spider. Do you understand how much Ron Weasley must love Faux Mad-Eye Moody right now?
These guys are rock star.
Yes, seriously. Oh my gosh. And he's like thinking, he's like, your dad hooked me up. Like, yeah, we're good.
We're buddies. Buddy.
I'm actually going to know how to say your last name.
They're not going to call
him
Wemby.
How many people have got him Wemby or Weatherby yeah. or Wimsby or anything like that? Like, this guy knows you. So just in my mind, like, everybody thinks this is the guy. This is the rock star. He even knows Ron Weasley. And he starts to go in a little bit. And we also see how his faux eyeglass can see in the back of his head.
Mm-hmm. That is so cool. There's that great scene in the film where Mad-Eye throws the chalk piece. Yeah. Was it at Seamus?
Seamus Finnegan,
yeah. He throws it at Seamus. I wonder if that was scripted or not.
Whatever it was so good.
It was awesome. And I kind of... The movie version of Moody is, I feel like, a lot more aggressive than book version. Book version reminds me, like, especially with Draco, when he's like quiet. Like, he's, okay, tell your dad. Please tell your dad. In this, like, he does say constant vigilance, but the rest of it feels like, yeah, you think someone's going to be nice.
It makes you wonder what the audition process was like, and if a lot of people came in reading a bit more calmer version of Moody, mm-hmm. and then the actor who got the gig came in, he's like, I'm gonna be the tapped one, the PTSD one, mm-hmm. who just tells it as it is, who's like the crabby uncle who's like, I just yell and do crazy things all the time and twitch and stuff. And they were like, this is the vibe that's gonna put people on edge. This is the vibe that's always gonna say something isn't quite right, mm-hmm. even though it's fun, even though there's really cool things going on. So then he goes on, and Ron's the first one who says about a curse. So they talk about the Imperius curse, and he's able to talk about this, and he takes the spider and he does Imperio, and everyone of course is laughing. And so very much parts of this, the lesson with Faux Mad-Eye Moody in this book is pretty much what you see in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times word for word, you can visualize the whole thing. I think that scene was carried over quite well. Really talking, of course, about how the Imperius curse was one of the most well used of these unforgivable curses. And we see Harry do this later on in the books. So it's interesting to see that this is the curse that the trio eventually does end up using as an unforgivable curse.
Correct, yeah. Well, and here's something also to say, too. They use the Imperius curse on a goblin. And that's the difference here, because notice that Moody, or Faux Moody, says, if you do this on a human, this will end you up in Azkaban for life. Mm-hmm. But they don't use it on a human. Again, like I said, they use it on a goblin later on. So, like, there's that
fine gray area. Yeah.
Because how do you define what's human and what is inhuman?
We're with SPEW. I mean, we're all of these creatures, you know, that ends up coming into play, though, later on.
And I think
book.
I think on the larger scale here, too, we talked a lot about the author through the characters playing this real long game in terms of the plot, mm-hmm. but just the overall theme and the overall narrative of what she's trying to accomplish in this book and what she has been accomplishing throughout the series through first in book one, which was Wee Hogwarts! And then it was Chamber of Secrets, like, you know what?
Something's fishy here.
That's a little dark. Like, okay, cool. And then we have book three, and you're like, okay, that took a turn souls being sucked out of people's body.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. And now we have this showing fourth year students. The overall narrative and the overall theme is we are getting to death here. We are getting to something that is much darker and much more real. Mm-hmm. And that is the perfect example of when Moody or Faux Moody is saying, do you think someone's going to come up to you nice and just say, hey, Avada Kedavra, wee! No, they're going to come up to you and they're not even going to say nothing. You're just going to die.
Yes.
Can you imagine that being in the first book? No, you can't. And that is such a distinct turn. I've always argued that the real turn in narrative was book three. But if you try to think that it ain't happening in book four, then you are sadly, I mean, you're on Mars, because this is the beginning here.
And what's interesting, of course, is Moody says, I'm going to be teaching you how to fight the Imperius curse. You know, he's really passionate about this particular one. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's interesting. And then, of course, he goes on and asks for another curse. Hermione's hand once again goes up in the air because she just knows everything. But Neville's hand goes up in the air and it surprises Harry to see that Neville is taking place with this. Neville is the one who brings up the Cruciatus curse. And Moody was looking very intently at Neville, this time with both eyes. Your name's Longbottom, he said, his magical eyes swooping down to check the register again. Neville nodded nervously, but Moody made no further inquiries. Turning back to the class at large, he reached into the jar, and he still does it. Still does it right in front of me. She's like, ooh. Hey.
Wow.
Guess what I did?
Yeah, right.
Guess what I did?
Yep.
With Bella.
Yeah. Like,
no. Like, in his mind. He can't show it. But in his mind, he's like, no way I did this curse on your parents.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Like, that's straight up. You get a popsicle headache trying to figure out the motivations between Barty Crouch and how that is somehow Barty Crouch Jr. and how that's somehow related to Alistair Moody and, but not, and, straight up popsicle headache.
So he does, of course, he does the curse right in front of Neville, and Neville has an absolutely terrible reaction. His hands were clenched upon the desk in front of him, his knuckles white, his eyes wide and horrified.
And the funny thing is, well, it's not funny, but the author does this so perfectly. She makes you trust the version of Moody that you're watching or that you're reading. Because, you think that this is a teacher that later on is taking responsibility maybe for going what you think is a little too far.
Yeah.
And even Hermione calling him out, being like, stop, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And you see that Moody is like, yeah, you know what, why don't you come have a cup of tea? And you think it just ingratiates you to that personality when, you know, in effect, it's by design.
And last but not least, we have Avada Kedavra, and he does it quickly right then and there. Doesn't really have too much of an explanation beforehand, but then he talks about it a bit at the end. It's not nice, not pleasant, and there's no countercourse. Why do I have a hard time saying that? There's no blocking it. Only one person has ever survived it, and he's sitting right in front of me. Harry felt his face redden as Moody's eyes, both of them, looked into his own. He could feel everyone else looking at him, too. Harry stared at the blank blackboard as though fascinated by it, but not really seeing it at all. Like, imagine being Harry Potter at this moment, knowing everyone's looking at you, that no one in the history has been known to survive this.
Right.
And there he is, just looking straight ahead. Bless Harry's humble
awkward
heart. He's such like, he's a really sweet, humble 14-year-old. You think of all the
great,
crazy
Bob
things that happened to him?
Yep.
What would you have done?
I think I would have done exactly that. I would have just sat there.
You know what I would have done?
What?
Being the slight round that I am?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's me.
Better raise my hand.
Put the finger up.
Yeah, would have done the little like soldier thing, like, yeah. Embrace the awkward.
Yeah, no, I would have just
embrace, like, yeah.
Nope, I would have just sat straight ahead, eyes forward.
Or said, this is awkward. I would have done an audible
thing.
Yeah, like,
that, you absolutely would have been the Michael Scott of the class at that moment. It's, you know that face?
Yes.
That face, yeah.
That would have been me.
That would absolutely would have been
so you. God bless the humbleness on Harry Potter. All right, so then we go on. We have all of Harry thinking of all these things. He's talking about how he was actually able to hear both of his parents and stuff. Or he's been picturing his parents' death over and over again for 3 years now, ever since he found out that they had been murdered, ever since he found out what had happened that night. Wormtail had betrayed his parents' whereabouts to Voldemort, who had come to find them at their cottage. How Voldemort had killed Harry's father first. How James Potter had tried to hold him off while shouted at his wife to take Harry and run. Voldemort had advanced on Lily Potter, told her to move aside so that he could kill Harry. Let's pause. Told her.
Yeah.
Girl, I ain't got nothing on you. Mm-hmm. I'm actually trying to save you for Snape because he done me a solid. Mm-hmm. So can you please move? No. Listen, honey, this is part of the deal. I've got time to, please move. I don't want you. And I told Snape, okay, you're not going to move. Sorry, Snape. Boom. And how she begged him to kill her instead, refusing to stop shielding her son. And so Voldemort had murdered her too before turning his wand on Harry. Harry knew these details because he had heard his parents' voices when he had fought the Dementors last year. And for that was the terrible power of the Dementors, to force their victims to relive the worst memories of their lives and drown powerless in their own despair. I loved these two paragraphs because obviously here we are, the fourth book in this series. If people are this far, they've read the previous three, mm-hmm. or at least watched the first three movies. But it catches you back up. Here's exactly what happened. Here's the order that it happened. Make sure to sneak in that he asked Lily to move aside. Right. So we get those pieces in there that we're not going to learn about the importance of that until we get to have Snape's memories shown to
the
Harry.
Big reveal, yeah.
Yes, and then we're able to remind ourselves what Dementors do. Dementors who are going to be dealing with a lot in the future, in particular in book five. You know, we're going to be seeing them and feeling their pain and reminding this. So I like this because it catches you up in a way that isn't okay, everybody, to remind everyone this is what happened.
Exposition is good. It can be good. And we've talked about it a kabillion times. Dino DNA from Jurassic Park. Great exposition. This right here. Great exposition. It brings you up to snuff and it reminds you of the little details that you need to know to understand the context of the story going forward. Exposition is not wholly bad. When it is bad, that is when we get the scene between Dumbledore and Madame Rosemerta and McGonagall. Hey, you remember, right? Yeah, they were best friends.
You remember Sirius Black and James Potter?
Yeah, that at the bar with Hagrid and Fudge. That is bad exposition. That is when the story comes to a complete halt and screeches the brakes and says, "Look at me." Mm-hmm. Exposition is good is when it is seamless, when you don't even recognize the fact that you are getting exposited.
Class wraps up. Neville is obviously upset. Faux Mad-Eye Moody brings him up to the office. Come on, I'll have a cup of tea.
Yep.
And then he even checks on Potter.
Yep.
You all right, Potter? Yes, said Harry, almost defiantly. Moody's blue eye quivered slightly in its socket as it surveyed Harry. Then he said, "You've got to know. It seems harsh, maybe, but you've got to know. No point pretending. Well, come on, Longbottom. I've got some books that might interest you." This is interesting. You know, we don't get this in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, we get the compassion about, "Ooh, I messed up on Neville," but here we are. Like, yes, this is what happened to Neville's parents, but also this is what happened to Harry's parents. Mm-hmm. And Harry doesn't have necessarily the same physical reaction that Neville has, mm-hmm. but Moody's acknowledging, "Wow, this is messing you up too." Mm-hmm. I'm going to acknowledge that. But then he says, "You've got to know. You've got to know." Why? Because honestly, Voldemort's going to try to Avada Kedavra him at the end. So why does he need to know?
Well, again, this is when you get the popsicle headache.
The Faux Mad-Eye Moody popsicle headache, yes.
Right, because you have to discern what is Barty Crouch Jr. versus an actual teacher versus what the author is trying to accomplish,
mm-hmm.
right? You as the reader, as of this moment, you know, got blinders, right? Let's put the blinders on. You don't know that Moody is Barty Crouch Jr.
Mm-hmm.
The author has the job of making you want to support Faux Mad-Eye. She has to, because if you don't, you're never going to buy the twist. For every good thing that happens with Moody, in order for the twist at the end of the story to be effective, you have to build up that trust. You have to build up the reasons why to like this person. If you don't, the twist won't matter. Like, as much as Professor Quirrell was a cool twist, it was nothing. It was a nothing twist because you didn't care.
I take this as this is the curriculum that Dumbledore wanted him to teach.
Yeah, but why does he care about what Potter feels?
Oh, the Potter feel, yes. It is to create that connection so that he can gain his trust and help him in the Triwizard Tournament.
Correct.
I don't think he's teaching Potter anything necessarily to help him against Voldemort, possibly so that Harry can stay alive until he meets Voldemort, possibly just so that he's not having the Imperius curse cast upon him by one of the fellow contenders.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like Victor Krum. Victor Krum ends up being, you know, having the Imperius curse on him. So it's... I think that he's giving him a couple of tools so that he can make it to the Triwizard Tournament so that Voldemort at the end can kill him.
Yep.
But I also think with Sirius's letter at the end of this, I'll just read it right now. Harry, I'm flying north immediately. This news about your scar is the latest in a series of strange rumors that have reached me here. If it hurts again, go straight to Dumbledore. They're saying he's got Mad-Eye Moody out of retirement, which means he's reading the signs, even if no one else is. So I'm wondering if Dumbledore said, listen, they've had some really bad teachers in the past. They only learned about, like, you know, Grindelwald. Love Lupin, but, like, that's what they're at. I kind of need you to step it up. I need you to actually teach them this and teach them how to protect themselves about some of these things. I need them to know.
Yeah. The other question I have about Dumbledore, and I think this is the question that consistently pops out throughout all of the books, especially the first three books that we've analyzed, is how much does Dumbledore know? How much is he aware that perhaps Mad-Eye is Barty Crouch Jr., right? Like, is there a foreknowledge of this, and is he bringing him
that
on?
That isn't acknowledged by the author, is what you're saying.
Yes.
That hasn't come out, but it is interesting as we kind of work on the canon of our brains to kind of expand on Dumbledore.
Right.
No matter what, as Sirius says, he's reading the signs. He knows things are happening. He knows that Voldemort is gaining more power. We just had everything happen at the Quidditch World Cup. He knows that stuff is happening, so he's trying to line up his chess players and even help arm these kids.
And on a base level, it makes sense, right? On a base level, you think, okay, bring in Alistair Moody because this guy is legit.
Yes.
And he will not hold back as it relates to the teaching of the dark arts.
Yes.
It's important that these kids get exposed because this is coming. It doesn't, like, it's almost like, as a parent, I want my kid to be prepared. I want my kid to be prepared for everything that life is going to be thrown our way. And you and I have said, okay, they taught us how to write a check, but why didn't they tell us to balance a budget? Why didn't they teach us how to do insurance?
Or I'm keeping this still family friendly, but like stranger danger.
Right.
Or understanding the importance of protecting private parts. You know, things like that, that you don't want to have to talk about, but sometimes you have to talk about it in a careful way. And I think that that's what Dumbledore is trying to do, is like, in a careful way, these students need to know because Voldemort's coming back,
right?
And there's Death Eaters acting all up, and there's different signs. I mean, think about it. In the next book, there's a massive breakout from Azkaban with people who did these curses. So it's not that he's going to know that necessarily happens, but
no, but he knows that something is brewing.
Yes.
And he, like, because of the whole thing with Quirrell, he knows that Voldemort is making a play, right? He knows that there's something going down, especially between Quirrell and the Chamber of Secrets and how that has been affected. He has the diary. Like, he has it. It's canon that he has the diary, and he's studying it. And it's just a question of, okay, how much is he preparing these kids? How much does he know about Moody? If it is Barty Crouch Jr., we have this consistent debate. And it's a valid one. Mm-hmm. It's an absolutely valid one, because if Dumbledore knows all this stuff is coming, and Dumbledore does know that it is Barty Crouch Jr., he's knowingly exposing these children to someone that can potentially do them harm.
So in author world, he doesn't know that.
Okay.
It's faux that Mad-Eye Moody is not really Mad-Eye Moody.
Right. Okay.
But in our headcanon, we can sit there and be like, but did he?
Yeah,
but
correct.
Did he know? So we move on and we head back to the Gryffindor Tower and the boys are working on their divinations homework. And this is when Hermione comes on in and talks about arithmetic. And the boys are completely making up divinations homework. Divinations is a class that I do not understand why Harry and Ron and her signed up for. Part of me wonders, was the only other option at this time arithmetic? Did they sit there and say, okay, what's the lesser of the two evils?
Right.
We can make up our answers in divination
sure.
and still get like a solid B.
Yep. And just like get through it.
Yes.
I know yeah. I did that in school. I signed up for a couple of classes and I was just like, I just want to get through it.
Yeah. Even though they hate it, even though they get annoyed and they get sleepy, I kind of feel like it's like the easy coast class for them that yep. they don't really care about. It doesn't necessarily seem like Harry or Ron really worry about getting super high marks.
Yep.
In anything.
That was my philosophy class my sophomore year. I took it at 8 in the morning. Worst mistake I've ever made. Never. If kids, when you're going to college, don't take a class.
Do what you want.
At 8 in the morning.
Do what you want.
It's the worst.
I did it and it was great.
It's horrible.
If you're a morning person, just do it.
Don't do it.
Do it.
Just take a class at 5:30 at night. Take a class at 6 o'clock at night.
No, no. That's dinner time.
Go to bed.
And second dinner.
Stay to bed.
Snack.
Sleep.
Be the first kid in the dining hall.
Definitely don't do that.
Get yourself a coffee and a raisin toast with some butter on it. Do your homework right then and there so it's fresh in your mind.
Get up at 10:30. Get up at 10:30. Saunter into the dining hall.
Doesn't matter that you're a music major and you're there with engineering students at 8 a.m. You do it.
Eat all the bacon.
You'd be the best in that
and
class.
And rank on the band kids.
Okay, so here we go. Once again, Blake and I would not have dated in college.
Oh, man.
This is why I dated boys from Harvard.
Harvard kids, get out of here.
It was he's lovely.
Such a... talk about
anyway,
nerds,
stop,
Harvard kids.
Stop. Listen. Just calm down. Anyway, while they are in the Gryffindor common room, this is when we meet back up with Neville. And he says he's fine. He holds up the book, Magical Water Plants of the Mediterranean. Apparently, Professor Sprout told Professor Moody, I'm really good at herbology, and he thought that I'd like this. So Harry thought that it was a very tactful way of cheering Neville up, for Neville rarely heard that he was good at anything. It was the sort of thing Professor Lupin would have done. So once again, even though it's not necessarily happening directly to Harry,
yep.
Harry's impression of Moody is now once again elevated.
Yep, absolutely.
Even comparing Mad-Eye Moody to Professor Lupin, right? They make up what's happening. Supposedly they may be drowning twice. They fix that a little bit. They see Fred and George, who are opposite wall. They're sitting together with their quills out, poring over a single piece of parchment. And Harry thought it was very unusual to see them away in a corner. They're usually the extroverts in the middle of everything, wanting all of the attention. So it makes him think about what they were working on back at the Burrow. And he thinks maybe this is their Weasley's Wizard Weasley's back again.
But they have that line. It's just like, you're going to make the, it sounds like you're accusing him. And mm-hmm. it's this little bit of a mystery as yes. to what these two were doing, and it helps you pour into the next chapter.
Yes, exactly. Crookshanks is still here, going strong.
Crooky!
Love Crooky. And Hermione goes into SPEW, which you've already talked about, so we're not going to talk about it anymore. Hedwig comes back. Hedwig. We've gotten this far, chapter 14, and haven't really been able to hang with Hedwig that much since he sent him on his merry way. Sirius writes this note. We've talked about it already, but obviously Harry is nervous. He doesn't want Sirius to get into any trouble. And then I loved this last bit. If Sirius came back and got caught, it would be his, Harry's, fault. Why hadn't he kept his mouth shut? A few seconds pain and he'd had to blab. If he had just had the sense to keep it to himself. He heard Ron come up to the dormitory a short while later, but did not speak to him. For a long time, Harry lay staring up at the dark canopy of his bed. The dormitory was completely silent, and he had been less preoccupied. Harry would have realized that the absence of Neville's usual snores meant that he was not the only one lying awake. I feel like Neville's soundtrack would be like,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, there he is, just like thinking about the water plants, but also thinking about his parents. Like, he just saw the Cruciatus curse performed in front of him.
Right, yeah.
That does something to you.
That tears your heart up, and especially after what was written.
These two boys who their parents were either killed or tortured, saw it now in class, and they're both lying there. And they're not, you know, they're 14, so they're not going to be like, hey.
Yeah.
are you emotionally well? Like, do you want to have grab a tea and talk about it? Because since we have this in common, like, they're both just laying there.
And especially after what was written, I think, a couple of chapters ago where Neville's like, yeah, you know, I should put my name in there too. Because, you know, my grandmother, she's always saying that I need to, like, live up to my parents. And, like, his grandmother, I'm sure, is, like, a nice person on some level. But to Neville, straight up evil. Like, awful. And
she comes off that way.
And he has to make up for this and, like, live up to her expectations. Mm-hmm. Come on, man. The kid's already got enough going on. Mm-hmm. And here she is, you know, making the kid suffer. Yeah. This is the worst. This is the worst.
Yeah.
Got anything else you want to talk about this chapter,
Marvin?
That
is really it.
All right. Are you ready for a different perspective?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Holy cricket. You're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Buddy Crouch Jr.
Buddy!
Yeah, man!
I am rocking and rolling. What? You got a question for me?
You've had a successful run here. You get it. You fool all the police.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows?
Nobody knows.
Don't nobody know. And you're sitting there torturing this kid whose parents you straight up, like, tortured too.
Okay, I'm living the best life.
Yeah,
the
you
best
are.
Life, okay? Before I was, like, hiding at my dad's and, yep. like, I had Winky bothering me all the time. Mm-hmm. And now here I am eating all the food that elves make. Oh, I have pudding every single night. It's amazing.
It's like a cruise. You get, like, 3 dinners.
Yeah, they make my bed. All those house elves. I don't care. Whatevs.
They're putting, like, the alligators on your bed with the towels and the sunglasses
okay,
and everything.
Okay, sure. We got all that.
The swans.
Best of all. So here I am, eating free food, uh-huh. got a free bed, yep. don't have to deal with my dad, yep. having a blast.
Sounds great.
Chatting with Voldemort. I even get to do the unforgivable curses for my job.
Turning kids into ferrets?
Ooh, man.
Sounds like a party.
I'm living life. I haven't said Crucio for so long.
You must have been satisfying, like one of those ASMR videos.
The electricity going through my fingers into my wand.
Buzzing.
Okay. It's amazing. And I messed up that long-bodied kid something fierce. And little does he know, I'm still messing with him. I got the long game. Both of these kids, you know, there's supposedly this prophecy about some, like, kid born in July.
Yeah,
I'm just going to mess them both up.
Yeah,
both.
You know what?
Longbottom and Potter. Going to mess you both up.
Two birds, one stone.
Boom. Crucio, Avada Kedavra. Doom both. The Imperious one, that's one that's really, really special and dear to my heart.
Yes, yeah.
I'm going to do some really fun things with that in the future.
Sure.
But, yeah, I am living
well,
my
best life. Well, you don't want to blow your load all at once.
The only problem is this eye.
Yeah,
it's like I took that pill in the Matrix. I see a heck of a lot more than I was imagining I would
right.
ever see.
Yeah.
But it's kind of crazy, and I hope I get to keep this. The end.
Good job, Mary,
Thank you, Blake.
All right, you ready for some email and questions?
Yes.
Because we have some.
Yes.
Of course, ladies and gents, if you are listening to this on the podcast app and you are not watching us live on the social media platforms, that's okay. Don't worry about it.
Totes.
Totally cool. What you want to do is you want to email us. You want to email us at maryandblakemedia@gmail.com or just go to maryandblake.com, hit the contact button, and you'll see the email there. Just write it on in. Then when we receive it, we will answer your questions here live on the podcast. And that is that. Let's do the listener questions.
Oh, Miles here.
All right. So we got one from Faye. Faye chimes in, says, I'm a longtime fan and follower of your podcast.
Hey, Faye.
Thank you. I listen to This Is Us, too, and have even sent a voice message or two to OutlanderCast.
Thank you. I'm now
really loving the Potterverse. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Of course, go to maryandblake.com, listen to This Is Us, too, about This Is Us, coming back late next year, I believe. Faye continues, I'm sending a question that is relevant for Chapter 14 of the Goblet of Fire, which I'm currently rereading. This is my favorite chapter in all of the Harry Potter series. The scene where Mad-Eye Moody demonstrates the unforgivable curses on the spiders, and then after showing the Avada Kedavra curse, says, not nice, not pleasant, and there's no counter curse. There's no blocking it. Only one person has ever survived it, and he is sitting right in front of me. I will actually agree with you, Faye, as I'm chiming in here. My favorite part in this whole chapter. Just such a great, it brings this whole chapter together, in my opinion. chills, Faye says. This gave me chills that every time I read it. I remember how it felt the first time, too. So good. I love it. And before I get to my question, a quick recap of Moody. In the previous chapter, chapter 13, we saw the great scene where he transfigures Draco Malfoy into a ferret to teach him a lesson. Classic. Then, on this chapter, we see him use Spidus to demonstrate the unforgivable curses. Finally, of course, we know that this isn't truly Alistair Moody, but actually Barty Crouch Jr., a devout Death Eater, impersonating him. So, my question to you, and maybe this is the question that she has. In this chapter, we see that the third spider, the one that Moody would use to demonstrate the Avada Kedavra curse, is trying to escape from him, almost as though it knew it was coming.
Yeah.
What if it did know that it was coming? What if these spiders were actually people that he, Barty Crouch Jr., had transfigured and captured, and he was punishing? What do you think of that possibility, Marvin?
I don't think it's what happened, but that would be an amazing little headcanon that you just went down, Faye. I'm very proud of you. I think the spider just knew. I think that in the Potterverse, creatures, all great and small, are given a bit more knowledge than we do here in the human world. As we know, you know, creatures know a lot. Creatures know a lot inside this book. Crookshanks.
All the crookie. You know what I'm going to give Faye? I'm going to give Faye this.
Makes me want to shout.
Absolutely.
Got close there.
I love that headcanon. That headcanon is great. From Brayden. Hey guys, my name is Brayden and I'm a huge fan of the Potterverse podcast. And even though I'm only 14, I really enjoy the podcast and can't wait for the next episode. Also, what are your thoughts on The Cursed Child being a movie instead of a play? Marvin, thoughts?
I'm down. I'm down with a movie Cursed Child. I don't know how well it will go, but that would be awesome.
It would be interesting.
You haven't even read it.
No, but the reason why I say it's interesting is because Jack Thorne and everybody, even the author, have come back together to rewrite The Cursed Child so that it will be going back onto Broadway, but they are improving it. So I wonder if...
Oh.
I wonder if
I'm going to need the next version to see if they fix what needed to be fixed.
I wonder if
am I, Umbridge? Perfect what must be perfected.
No, God, please, no.
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 No. No.
What can be perfected?
Oh, my goodness. That woman's evil. I wonder if that is the
leading up to a movie
being produced.
I'm honestly here for pretty much anything in the Potterverse. I am here for expansion in any which way, shape, and form. I will say that I do not find as much joy and love for the Fantastic Beast series. So if The Cursed Child were to be something and I got to spend more time at Hogwarts, where I can't talk about it too overly much because Blake hasn't read it, but if I got to see some familiar faces and play around with some different things, I'd be okay with it. I'm not going to put my foot down and be like, oh no, it can never be made. I'll never watch it. No, I will definitely watch it.
The problem with the Fantastic Beasts is that it's just generally not good films.
We'll tackle
that. They're not written well. And it also...
They pale in comparison to Potter.
And what happens when their lead character is probably one of the most boring characters in the entire series.
That's
what happens.
Newt Scamander!
Newt Scamander's the worst.
No, he's not.
So boring. All right, this one comes from Taylor. I just started listening to you guys in the Potterverse a few weeks ago. I'm only on book 2, but I'm trying to catch up with the lives as well.
Yay.
First off, I love you guys. This podcast is giving me life in the craziness of school and work. So thank you for doing
that. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Taylor. I don't have any questions about book 4 so far, but I'm going back to book 2 since I'm halfway through that. Mary, I know you said that the author kind of knew how many students she imagined at Hogwarts. My question for you is, do you think there might be a different amount of students each year based on the times? For instance, when Harry was born, Voldemort was in full power. So maybe witches and wizards, especially those that were not pure blood, weren't having kids out of fear. Just curious.
Ooh.
Marvin, thoughts?
Listen, that is a fantastic, fantastic question. You know, they're saying that a lot of people right now, here we are in the pandemic, and a lot of people have actually abstained from having children just because of the situation that they're in. Some other people are just like, YOLO. So I would agree that I bet you during Harry Potter's conception time frame mm-hmm. that people might have been a little scared.
And then also, let's think of this too. Even after there's probably a huge dip because of all the people that died in the Wizarding War.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, think back to like boomer, baby boomers.
Yeah, right. So like
the people there was an influx.
Well, no, I'm saying that there was probably a dip. And then
like
once...
Ginny's class is bursting at the seams.
Yes. No. I wouldn't be surprised. Older. No, but still, but... whatever. Like what I'm saying is there's probably a natural dip because
Dennis
there is
Creevy's
the Wizarding
class.
War. Dennis Creevy.
Great question. I don't know, but I feel like it would just be an equal number.
All right. Second question from Taylor. Is it Taylor? Yes, it's Taylor. Second question may be a stretch, but we know that Lucius in Voldemort's diary for safekeeping before he fell, or that he had the diary before he fell. But do you think the plan was to get it back into Hogwarts all along? Or could Voldemort have gained enough strength from Quirrell to use a Legilimens to plant the idea in Lucius's mind since the Sorcerer's Stone didn't pan out? So the diary was plan B, perhaps?
I think it was a plan all along.
I think so, too.
Just get that basilisk, kill all the
Muggles. I mean, obviously the plan was Quirrell to begin with. And perhaps the book was plan B, but I think that was just the next step. And that's a pivot move.
You have to have a lot of backup options.
You got to have
if multiple sources, not of income, but of death. Multiple sources of destruction.
You guys have given me so many different perspectives, and I'm thinking about the series in ways I've never done before. I'm glad you guys made it through the tropical storm. Looking forward to seeing another live soon from Taylor.
Thank you, Taylor. Yes, we've made it through the hurricane into tropical storm. We know that a lot of you might have been affected, so know that we've been thinking about you all, and thank you very much.
Last one comes from John. He says, Professor Trelawney predicted that Harry was born in midwinter, which was very inaccurate, but because Harry was born on July 31st. However, do you know who was born in midwinter? The shared soul of Voldemort, who was born on December 31st. John, let me say this.
That's deep.
Do you know how many nerds called us out for not thinking of that on the podcast at that moment? I got more emails than you. I just picked John's just because whatever, you know, like so many nerds had pointed this out to me and it blew my brain. It shows the power of the nerd clan that they got this stuff. And this is why these communities exist, because all of us nerds, we source our brains and we figure it all out together. And I love creating a platform where nerds like John or nerds like Taylor or whoever can come together and just talk about Harry in these specific ways. Awesome. Thank you for calling us out, everybody. And thank you, John, for calling us out. Awesome. Anything else, Marvin?
That is it.
Let's close it out.
So very much for taking the time to hang on out with the Potterverse. You can do us one of the biggest favors by sharing this podcast episode. If you're watching us live on Facebook or YouTube, you can click that little share button, pop it into your stories, your Facebook profile, your fellow Harry Potter groups. The more Potter fans that can find the Potterverse, the better. And if you're listening to this on a podcast app of choice, screenshot your podcast, pop it in your stories, and tag us at Mary and Blake Media. Let people know that this is what keeps you company in the time of Nox. We are your light of Lumos, and we are happy to be there. Sharing is caring. Honestly, podcasts are best found by word of mouth.
Yep.
So if you're just keeping this all to yourself, now's the time to tell your friends, my friend.
And if you do think that we are providing value in your Harry Potter experience and giving you this Lumos in the time of Nox, please do us a favor. Also, in addition to sharing, give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcatchers, or even Facebook.com, thefacebook.com. That will help introduce other listeners to what we're doing here, making this podcast current and showing that, hey, this podcast is awesome, or hey, this podcast sucks, but either way, listen.
Don't say that. All right, my name's Mary Larson.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.